Part 3, San Francisco City Jail, Cell A2. The bars closed behind me. There was far too much in a small place for me to comprehend. I sat on the first empty bed I saw and heard my first words in jail. "Get the fuck off my bunk," from a man sitting on the toilet. That was Stu, a red-haired, florid, burned-out case. My assigned bed was top and center in an 8-by-12-foot cell. 6 double bunks, 6 men, 4 white, 2 black. "First question, where are you from?" by Woody, built like a wrestler, black, in his 40s. "Here?" I meant San Francisco. "Fool thinks he's from jail. Where are you born?" "St. Louis." From then on, I was Missouri. "Second question, what you in for?" "Calling a cop a motherfucker." That got a laugh. "For what?" "A righteous cause," said Woody. Pop Kelly, a gentle and wise tenderloin junkie professor and shoplifter who'd done more time in jail than I was old, gave me H.G. Wells' Outline of History to read. "It'll tell you how the Bible got written, where our languages come from." His shoplifting specialty was cashmere sweaters. The high tension wire in A2 ran between Slim, my age, Irish-American second-story man with a cruel radar tuned to any weakness he could exploit, and Stu, beefy, barely under control. Slim claimed to have headed the white Aryan youth nation at Chino State Prison, but insisted, "I'm not a Nazi, I'm a scientific Aryan." Later, when we became unlikely prison friends, I learned he'd been at Stop the Draft Week, not to protest, but to brawl. He supported the Vietnam War because it kills off the colored races. He could talk that way in a cell where everything was heard because the inmates of the colored races, Woody, Big Man, and later Jimmy, could have crushed Slim's head between their thumbs, which they knew he knew and he knew they knew he knew. He never made anything personal. It was always abstract racism. Pop and Stu ignored Slim's racist rants, and I argued against them, so balance was maintained. During the first days, I watched, listened, tried to control my fear. On the second night, I hallucinated the bars were made of water I could walk through. Then I got 10 visitors on visiting day, and my status shot up. No one else in A2 ever received visitors, let alone lawyers. Dick Hodge visited me twice a week in a private consultation room. Aryan Slim, on the outside for 3 months in the last 2 years, took it personally. "I fucked 7 broads," he said, reeling off their names like racehorses, "and not a nary one of them comes to visit me." I also gained respect by being the only guy in A2 who listened, honestly and with interest. The clashes between Slim and Stu were mocked in the nightly radio show by Red in the next cell over. His rapid-fire, perfectly timed improv told of the battle between the fearless mission freak, Slim, and Dingbat, Stu. In one episode, the fearless mission freak, disguised as a bull dyke in a topless joint, battled Dingbat's diabolical plot to snitch on every man, woman, and child in San Francisco. Dingbat, disguised as a priest, was finally defeated by the freak's logic. "If you snitch on everyone in San Francisco, who will the freak freak with?" Don't ask. It was all in the delivery. Until it turned serious. Red asked for toilet paper, a common courtesy. Stu started to pass a roll between the bars. Slim jumped for the roll. "Motherfucker, don't you give him no paper. Goddamn I will. Punk, you won't." Their fear and rage threatened us all. Slim backed Stu toward a corner, the rest of us alert and cool. The paper either got passed or not. Slim, swifter than Stu, though frightened of Stu's weight advantage, snatched the roll from his hand. Stu, close to hysteria, panting like a bear, eyes bloody, desperate, had no way out. Fight or flight, and there was nowhere to flee. 2 cops walked past with a prisoner. Slim slid to his bunk, leaving Stu exposed in the center. "Officer," Stu pled, "officer, I'm asking you as a human being, take me out of this cell before I kill him. I swear I'll kill him." The cops were baffled. "Kill who? Who's been fighting?" "I'll kill him," pointed at Slim, sitting innocently as a newborn hustler. The bulls, visibly nervous, locked Stew two cells away. His replacement was Jimmy, a young black liquor store stick-up man. Stew's removal deprived Slim of a target and stabilized the structure of power. Slim and I became prison friends, which is different from crime partners bonded in crime, or crime associates who you know will split on you when trouble comes. I played chess with Woody, partly to show Slim he couldn't count on me as an Aryan ally. Woody was good. It took me a week to win a game. Slim and I, the Nazi and the leftist, were the only ones who debated race. I was winning an argument against scientific Aryanism one afternoon, driving Slim to declare, "I've got one thing the niggers don't." "What's that?" I asked. "I'm free, white, and 21. At which moment, and I do not kid you, a black officer passed by on the other side of the bars, turned, smiled, and said, "You're white, 21, and what?" Made the day for the rest of us. Speaking of making our day, it turned out that Jimmy, the liquor store stick-up man, had perfect recall for movies and comedy records. Thus did Monday Night at the Movies come to A2. After dinner, typical menu, macaroni, beets, green jello, coffee-flavored water, and before lights out, we'd gather on our bunks or the floor, and Jimmy would recreate a pitch-perfect side of a Bill Cosby album, or, stretched over several nights, the entire movie The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, complete with music, playing all the parts, describing the scene, the camera angles, and always interrupted at the wrong moment. Just as the kid dies, Tuco jumps on his horse and rides. You see him through the window, and you think, now he's got Clint stranded. Wrong, because here comes that tooly-ooly-oo, wah-wah-wah, trick-gonna-happen music. And you see Clint leaning on a Confederate cannon, which is aimed right where Tuco's gonna be the minute the cannonball hits. Get it? Boom! Tuco's knocked off his horse on a rock, and you think he's dead, but what is the rock? It's a gravestone of the cemetery where the gold's buried. The lights flicker. Lights out. Cell check. Shit, says the rapt audience. One morning I woke at 4 and thought half-dreamingly, I like it here. I remembered the weekend a young monk studying architecture at Cornell invited me to visit his Benedictine monastery nearby. I woke at 5 the first morning when the matin bells rang across the snow, blanketed in a silence not of this world, and thought, I want to stay here. The mood ended during the Sunday slideshow about the abbot's recent trip to Rome. Here I am kissing the Pope's ring. Okay, well, let me out of here.